Hello and welcome to Home to Her, the podcast that's dedicated to reclaiming the lost and stolen wisdom of the sacred feminine. I'm your host, Liz Kelly, and on each episode, we explore her stories and myths, her spiritual principles, and most importantly, what this wisdom has to offer us right now. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the show. This is Liz joining you from Central Virginia, as usual, in the unceded lands of the Monacan Nation. And I am so glad that you are here again with me today. If you want to find out whose native lands you are on, go to native-land.ca. There's a map of the entire world. I cannot comment on how helpful it is beyond the United States, but I think it's super helpful for the United States. It looks super helpful for North America, too. So check that out if you want to know. I'll put that in the show notes. And if you are interested in learning about the sacred feminine in a deeper way, then I would love for you to check out my online school, which is Home to Her Academy. I started that in the fall of 2023. And my vision for this school is to bring together qualified, really engaging instructors who can teach us about the sacred feminine in ways that are rooted in the historical record, as well as being embodied and intuitive. There's no either or here. We get to have both. In ways that are intersectional and in ways that are practical, meaning that we can apply what we're learning to our ordinary, everyday, messy, and complicated lives. So a couple of upcoming classes I want to mention. Returning to the Well, Sacred Feminine Wisdom for Your Motherhood Journey. It's going to kick off on Sunday, January 21st. This was going to happen this fall, and then we decided to postpone it because the timing was a little crazy. I'm also going to teach my course, Home to Her Story, Home to Your Story, which is my introduction to the sacred feminine, and an exploration of what it all has to do with you. That's going to start on Wednesday, January 17th, 2024. And then I'm working on a couple for the new year, too. They're not up yet as of you're listening to this as of release date, but hopefully we will be up soon. And one of those is understanding lunar cycles, what they have to do with you, as well as sacred feminine mythology related to the moon. And then a sacred land stewardship course, which is going to include an in-person kickoff retreat near Mount Shasta in California, hopefully around Beltane, May, early May of 2024. So I'm super excited about all this. Check out hometoheracademy.com for more info. You can sign up for my newsletter there too if you don't see what you're looking for right away. It's coming. And hey, you know what makes a really good gift for the holiday season? I'm feeling so promotional. It's so dorky. But listen, if you if you need a good book to read at any time of the year, check out Home to Her, my book, Home to Her, Walking the Transformative Path of the Sacred Feminine. It is available wherever you buy your books, but please do consider buying it from my publisher, Womancraft Publishing. It's an amazing independent publisher, or order it from your local bookstore. And if you have read it, I'd love to know what you think. Your reviews on Amazon and Goodreads in particular are really helpful. I also just love your feedback. So always feel free to contact me via social. And same goes for the podcast. I love to hear your thoughts, and your reviews are always super helpful there. And that's it for my promotional spiel. So we are counting down to the final episodes of 2023. Wowzers. And this episode is one that I really, really, really wanted to do before the end of the year. And it's pretty different than any that I've done before. So for one thing, I've never had so many podcast guests on at one time. So this is going to be fun. But another thing, you might hear my perspective a little bit more than you do on a traditional episode. And that is because on this episode, my podcast guest and I are going to be sharing an overview of a presentation that we delivered at the Parliament of the World's Religions earlier this year in Chicago. And we can explain about what that is a little bit more, but I'll just tee it up by saying that this is an event that's attended by thousands of people from all over the world. And it represents so many different religious and spiritual traditions. It was a really amazing experience for me. I got to meet a ton of interesting people, including a lot of members of the Facebook group and some of you who listened to the show. That was pretty neat. And I got to attend a bunch of workshops and hear from really cool speakers. You know, maybe we'll get into some of that, the overall Parliament experience that we all shared. But what I really want to focus on is this talk that we gave, which was on how to foster intersectionality in earth-based spiritual traditions. And so to kick things off, I'm going to go ahead and tell you who my guests are today. The cool thing is they've all been guest on the show before. So if you want to do a deep dive into who they are and their work, I'm going to put that in the show notes so you can do that later if you haven't had a chance to listen to all those episodes. But I'm going to give you their names now, and then we're just going to go around and introduce ourselves in the same way that we did at our Parliament talk, which was sharing how we identify in terms of categories like gender, race, ethnicity, class, religious and spiritual background. And because this is all part of fostering intersectionality, right? It's paying respect to and holding space for our different experiences. So I have here with me today, Marie Naison. She was my most recent podcast guest, so her name might feel real familiar to you. Gina Martin, who was an earlier guest in 2023. I have Letty Sullivan. She was on way back in 2020. Feels like a long time ago. And then also, last but not least, Karen McGrandle, who was also a guest in 2023. Welcome, 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 my friends, to the show. It's so good to have you all here. I kind of can't believe we pulled this off. Okay, and they're nodding. For those of you who are listening, I'm not just hanging out here. Okay. All right. So why don't we start? I'm just going to pick on one of you. So why don't we just start with our quick roundtable introductions? And then I thought what we'd do after that is if anybody wants to just give a little bit of a heads up on what we're talking about with intersectionality. And if I know, Marie, you and Gina in particular have both been to more Parliament experiences in person. So if there's anything you want to, you know, share and explain about what that is. But Marie, I'm looking at you. So why don't I, no, she's shaking her head at me. Do you have to? Do you want to not go first? You don't have to go first if you don't want to.
I just have a little background noise right now that I'm trying to settle.
Okay, so Marie's not going to go first. So now I'm looking at Gina. Gina, you're on.
Hi. My given name is Regina Dinej Martin, and I identify as female. I come from the Midwest, the upper Midwest, the cold, brutal winter North Midwest, from a long tradition of French and Quebecois Catholics. So my family heritage was very mixed. My dad was a hillbilly from Tennessee who they never went to church, and my grandmother was a Welsh witch. So those two traditions crashed into each other like tectonic plates. So I am a cradle Catholic that found paganism probably in my toddler years and have embraced it ever since. I consider myself an eclectic pagan. And what that means to me is that I base my spiritual orientation to the rhythms of the earth, the changes of the season, the influence of the ancestors and the spirits of the land, and build a relationship from that place. In terms of class, I was raised in a very middle class situation, but first generation of my family to go to college. So that set me apart. I became somewhat of an odd intellectual duck in the midst of these hardworking, striving to be middle class people. And consequently, that really fueled my sense of, I don't belong here. How soon can I get out of this town before I fled, like the hounds of hell were on my heels, to New York City, where I found my tribe. In terms of ethnicity, I come from this French tradition and this Celtic tradition. And those two things, as I said, found a way to forge me, even though they felt very, very different and conflicting in my childhood.
Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going around the circle now. So Letty, I'm looking at you, my friend.
All right. So I think I'll tackle the subject matter that we're here for. And then I'll introduce myself. So we are here talking about intersectionality, which was a term that was coined in 1989 by Professor Kimberly Crenshaw. And she was talking about all of the ways that how we show up socially and how they intersect with each other in the way that we experience the world and the way that the world responds to us. And so for me, I identify as a woman. And I am a Black woman, born and raised, well, born in Chicago and raised in the South, and to a single mom who did her absolute best to allow us to transcend some of the challenges and difficulties that she faced coming up. She wanted to make sure that we were educated properly, that, you know, my eldest sister was the first one to go to college, and to just rise us up out of economic disadvantage that was occurring at the time, in the 80s, the 70s and 80s when I was born. It was a very, very challenging time for my mother to raise four kids on her own. And she did it, and she did it well. Spiritually, I come from a lineage of women that were practicing earth-based spirituality. However, it was whispered. There was some shame wrapped around it. And eventually my mother was born again, became an evangelical Christian. And so what my grandmother did with roots and herbs and certain things was not, it wasn't spoken about. It was practicing witchcraft. I did discover a bit of it later when my own gifts started to come in. And so I am this blend of earth-based spirituality as well as Christianity as I've come to understand it, and also the goddess culture. So I operate as a priestess in the world and among other things. So that's me.
Yes. And thank you for giving us the framework of intersectionality. That's super helpful. Yeah. Karen, you wanna go next for us?
Sure. So I am Karen MacRandall. I am the creator of the Divine Feminine app, through which I had the pleasure of meeting Gina, who invited me to participate in this workshop. We started meeting about a year ago. So we have traveled and gotten to know each other, and it has been an amazing experience. And I did not know the term intersectionality. So this has most definitely been a learning experience for me. I have always been, since starting this work in the app about 10 years ago, I had an experience with Elisa Starkweather and Daughters of the Earth, through which she really set in my mind the importance of, when we balance masculine and feminine, we must also balance cultures and genders and races, which, by the way, is a construct I found out from this book. I'm going to talk more about all of that later, but to back it up again, I identify as she, her. I am from, I really don't honestly know. I'm Celtic background and rather a mutt of a mix of Polish and my mother was the first in our family to ever graduate from college. My great grandparents came over from Europe. I got a mix of background from her. She was kind of only the only one around to tell me, and it conflicted. So I was like, three kids, four kids, what were their names again? You know? So I don't know. I heard this story that my great grandfather was put on a boat at 14 because his parents believed it would be a better world and a better chance and an opportunity for him over here, and they couldn't take care of him. So I can only imagine what it would be like to set off at 14 on your own and never see your family again. I grew up in Plano, Texas, for the most part, which is a very great school district, 98% white. But, you know, of the dozen Black people that were there, one was our class president, one was our homecoming queen. So I grew up with the thought, I'm not racist. And I've been doing a lot of dismantling of that, just like I've been doing a lot of dismantling of my religion. I grew up Catholic, and I always loved the sensual side of Catholicism. I loved the incense, the statues, the dust motes floating through the church, and the pretty statues. And most times I would listen to the sermon and say, huh? What? So, I've been balancing a lot with I identify with the divine feminine. I identify with goddess spirituality. I believe that she is found in every single religion out there. And I have lots of friends in all the religions, and I believe it's her time. And I'll cut it there. But the work that all of these women are doing, and a lot of the people listening, I know as well. This whole workshop experience has just been an amazing proof of how everything ripples out. And it's just participating in this workshop has changed me. And I'm so grateful to each and every one of you. And I'd love to share that in a little bit, but I'm going to stop there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And
Beautiful.
Marie, do you feel ready now?
Yes, yes,
Okay.
yes.
All right.
Jeez. I am Marie Clonazon, and as my title notes, Iya Mumble, and I'll explain that in a few minutes. I'm coming to you from the land of the Lenape people in Harlem, New York, but I'm originally from the land of the Awak and Taino, from the island of Hispaniola, born in Haiti, Port-au-Prince. I identify myself as Afro-Caribbean, though I was raised from the age of seven on these lands of the United States. Like Gina, a cradle Catholic, and will probably have mass said for me once I leave this dimension. That's my instruction to my daughter, is to say mass for me, because that is part of who I am, my heritage. And very similar to my sister Letty, I grew up with earth-based tradition, but it was unbeknownst to me until much later in terms of Haitian Wudun, which is the tradition out of Haiti, based out of West Africa. My mother practiced Wudun, but never really shared what she was doing. I saw things around my home, and much later, until I actually was initiated as a Mambo in Haitian Voodoo, that I understood that this is what she was doing. But at the time, did not feel comfortable, and I think really protecting the family, because African-based spirituality is vilified for most part in these United States and in other continents as well, in Europe. And so much later in my life, not much later, I began to really dive deep into that African spirituality in my 20s. But I'm an initiate of Haitian Voodoo, which is called a Mambo. I'm also an initiate of Ifa, which is in the Yoruba tradition, and we are called Iya. And it's the question of the intersectionality. I've been stepping into these spaces for as long as I can remember, especially in spirituality, as I also am very much involved and engaged in Native American Lakota Sundance and sweat lodges for going on 30 years. I also practice Hawaiian spirituality. And along all of those paths, I recognize the similarities and the roof that we have. With Gina Martin, I'm a member of our that community in terms of the Wiccan community, a triple spiral practice, raising and calling in the moon rituals with the priestesses, the Wiccan priestesses. So I consider myself also a Black witch. And yes, there's several of us that are there. And so for me, growing up in these United States and having the base of Afro-Caribbean have really formed who I am. Raised in a very middle class environment, and yet understanding, especially coming from Haiti, just the challenges of that country and the contribution of Haiti in terms of spirituality and other things that it has contributed to the world. So all of that brings me to who I am and where I am today. So intersectionality is each and every one of us, and we bring something very special when it comes to the goddess. And all of this, lastly, for me, and even the Catholic Church has been informed by the she, has been informed by the goddess. And so I walk with her each and every day, and I find her in each tradition that I have been in.
Thank you. Yes, and it is that thread line, isn't it? Well, whatever we're going to call her, the goddess, the divine feminine, the sacred feminine that brought all of us together. And I think most of the listeners have probably heard my story in bits and pieces, but I'll briefly give you my background in those terms as well. In terms of gender, I've always identified as female. Most of you have heard me reference that I grew up in the Deep South in Georgia, was raised as a Southern Baptist, and grew up in a house that was, we certainly considered ourselves middle class. I think after my parents were divorced when I was young, that's questionable. We were probably flirting. We were flirting pretty close to the poverty line, but I think we thought of ourselves always as middle class. And I do think that in and of itself was perhaps a privilege of whiteness. And my mother's status as a teacher put us kind of in a class of, you know, certain level of education. And so we didn't think of ourselves. We never thought of ourselves as lower class in any way because we had that. And then, you know, in terms of my ethnicity, I am, I think, mostly English and Scottish, some Northern European, but my family, at least on my mother's side, has 400 plus years on this soil, this American soil. So to me, this is very much home. And for better or worse, I feel about as American as they come. I am one of those really privileged people who has documentation of a lot of this on the soil. And so I know that my people fought on both sides of the Revolutionary War and both sides of the Civil War. I know that I have ancestors that enslaved people because I've seen the wills that detail that. I know that I have ancestors who received land grants of stolen indigenous lands and who died in skirmishes with indigenous people. And, you know, that can be heavy, I suppose. And I think when I first started learning all of this, it felt very heavy. I would say now it feels like an honor to hold all of this at this particular point in time, because I have so much, I have privilege, I have awareness, I have spiritual awareness, and it means that I can do something with this, that I can be in a position to offer healing to my ancestors and to not pass on baggage to my children. And it's not like I know how to do that all the time. A lot of times I feel like I'm kind of fumbling in the dark, but I feel grateful that this awareness came to me at this particular moment in time, in this incarnation of me, so that perhaps that I can do something about it. And then in terms of spirituality, y'all know I'm a goddess lover right here. I am interested in honoring the divine mother in all her forms. And so often that is rooted to the earth, which is why this was such a perfect conversation for me, you know, talking about intersectionality and specifically earth-based spiritual traditions. So I want everybody to just have a chance. We all shared a little bit more on what we think of when we think about intersectionality. And I want to do a little round table, and nobody's under any obligation to remember what you said at the parliament. It can morph. I'm lucky in that I'm really high strung around this stuff. So I actually have my notes here that I could like read from, but I'm not going to do that. But I want everybody to have a chance to share, either what was present for you at the parliament, you know, or, you know, if that's changed, you know, what's present for you around this topic and what you think is important to share now. And if anybody And again, Marie and Gina, I'm kind of looking at you. If there's anything that you want to say more about the parliament itself, you know, feel free to do that. So did any one of you feel super called to speak? Gina? Yeah.
One thing that became so clear to me is that this gathering of beautiful women who came together to create this presentation for the parliament is that we had the opportunity to explore not only our intersectionality between each other, but also the intersectionalities within each one of us. And we spoke of this when we gave our introductions just now, the confluence of traditions that come together within our DNA and within our family lineage and our class identification, and also our spiritual paths, which have asked each one of us to meet and greet different traditions with open hearts and open minds. And so I learned a lot about the ways that I have woven myself together, my own internal intersectionalities, in the opportunities I had to talk with all of you and to present our presentation. And that is such important work, to look within and see all the different bits and bobs that have woven together, all the ancestors that are responsible for us being present today, all of their contributions, and to not disparage any of it, but as Liz said, to hold it all, to have the opportunity to perhaps be, and this sounds a little grandiose, but to be light bearers for how to be in a process of becoming more whole in this time in history, when everything seems to be pulling not only groups apart, but families apart and individuals apart in their self-definition. So if we have woven ourselves together better, which I believe we have through this process, then I think that enables us to perhaps demonstrate to the bigger world how that is such a healing and useful process of weaving together, of pulling together our own diverse and often argumentative parts that can show how to be a better human in this changing world.
Yeah, if I can add, thank you for that, Gina. It just really opens my heart. And I think about the space called the Parliament of World Religion. And for the two of us, this was our third time having that experience. And it's one, and the parliament happens every 2 years, in different parts of the world. And it's a space that opens up to healing. And you have people from all spirituality, from all religion that gather to talk, to network, to converse in terms of what matters to us, right? And there's a strong representative from the goddess community. I would love to see more of African spirituality in that space. In fact, I think I could count on one hand in terms of the presentation. But I was there, Letty was there, speaking from our culture experience. And that space really brings the intersectionality of so many different tradition, and also for me, just a care for Gaia, for the planet. So there were a lot of sessions on the environment and the climate crisis and people coming together to say, what needs to be done? What can we do? Right? And that speaks to the Divine Mother because she is nature. And so that space is precious. Because for a week, we're really talking about how the goddess manifests on this plane called Earth and how we can best care for her. And so, it's just a fascinating experience. And then to be able to connect with this group of exemplary goddesses and priestesses was even more special for me.
So I would love to jump in and go next. I this was my first parliament, and I'm coming off of my second divorce 3 years ago, so I'm putting my life back together again. And I asked myself after the parliament, you know, was it worth it? It was very expensive. It took a week. It was exhausting. And, you know, it's like one of those things that you don't really see tangible. Okay, this is this. And I know that all of us do this work because we love it and it moves us and it gets us up in the morning, but we're mainly not getting paychecks for it. So, you know, it is a question that I often ask myself. And part of when we were doing this work, I said I wanted to share this story. So Letty and, or I'm not sure it was Gina or Marie who recommended my grandmother's hands for, I think everybody recommended it to me. And it's Resma Menakem. And I'm sure that Liz will put a link in the comments. But this is an incredible, absolutely incredible book. And it really speaks about intersectionality in that we are right here poised at this point in our story to heal this trauma. And I've been sitting there reading this book, and it's not something that you can sit down and read. Like a lot of these books, it's not something that you can sit down and read in one setting. I read a chapter, I read a few pages, and then I have to sit and think on them. And I had just gotten done reading about the different eras, and it talked about the enslavement era from 1619 to 1865. Where that was actually when the construct of race came into place. It wasn't a construct before that. It wasn't the white race, and how white supremacy was put in place as a political move to retain power. And, you know, the bottom line, and I'm also a huge fan of Marianne Williamson, and she says it a lot, that the struggle right now is not the division between the left and the right, or the you know, conservatives and the liberals. It's between those who hold power and those who don't have power. And so I'm sitting there and I read that, and it talked about, you know, when we came to the new world, how there were poor people of all different colors who wanted to have this freedom and to better make their lives easier. And the people who held the land rather used the construct of white race to create division and say, you know, you can have this land, but help me watch those Black people and keep them in line. And how this, you know, it's just, you know, it's a horrible thing to look. So I'm thinking on this, and I'm applying for jobs and doing this because my app doesn't pay my bills, which hopefully one day it will, but it doesn't now. And I get a call, and I get a call to do a job for Section 22007 of the Inflation Reduction Act that has been put in place by the Biden-Harris administration, of which I'd never, ever heard. And I'm curious how many people have heard of this, because it's amazing work. And when I avoid the media, which I try to do often because it is filled with crap, but I do see it every once in a while, and I do try to stay aware of what's going on. I've never seen anything about this. And, you know, I started this job. It's today will be my third day, and I'm already blown away. I am already completely blown away by hearing these stories of Black people, but it also addresses Hispanic, it also addresses Native American, it also addresses gender, it also just addresses that you were too young, you were too old, but for all these reasons, they were turned down loans by the USDA. And so there has been allocated $2.2 billion. And the program, you fill out a lengthy 40-page application, and that's my job to help with that. And then they're going to allocate those funds in the beginning of the year. And I'm just blown away. I'm blown away that I get to do this healing work. I'm sitting there listening to these, that I can, you know, have a hand in helping redress a wrong. It completely blows me away. And I have this gut knowing that I wouldn't have this job if I hadn't been on this path I've been on. And if I hadn't gone to Alicia Starkweather's and listened to her when she said we have to include everybody, and if I hadn't kept my ears open and made sure that I tried to reach out to as many people, and if I hadn't said, yes, I'm in, I want to do this workshop on intersectionality, let's talk about it, you know, and if I hadn't said, yeah, I'm going to read the book, you know, how everything just leads to another. And I just feel, you know, beyond belief, privileged and honored to be at this point in our story. I've spoken.
Thank you so much, Karen. It's just so beautiful to hear how that synchronicity comes together. And it's what happens when we're in alignment. And I think that's one of the things that speaks to intersectionality is that we come into alignment with one another. And the beauty of doing this work that has been much maligned in the past several years, it's been met with so much disdain for even the concept of honoring people for all of the ways that they show up in the world and how the world responds to them. Right, based on these traditions and sometimes, you know, xenophobia and all the isms, but to when you're sitting in circle and when you're in spiritual practice with someone, you get to really witness and have compassion for the fullness of how they show up, and that's, you know, that's what's so. What's been so beautiful for me in being in this circle, in this conversation that, you know, we had almost a year to prepare for our presentation at the Parliament. It was my first Parliament, and it was here in my city. So I didn't have to go anywhere. I was 10 minutes away from the venue, which was nice. And what I loved most about it is that you got to be really present with all of the ways that the divine expresses itself through humanity. And it reminded me of that Rumi poem that said, "Let the beauty we love be what we do," that there are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground. And so as I was witnessing all these spiritual practices, all these myriads of ways that we can kneel and kiss the ground and to love the earth and love one another and to see the ways that so many peoples were rising above the legacy of oppression and abuse and war and all those things that had, you know, had occurred in the past, but also presently occurring. It was heartening. It was encouraging to see so many people that were standing for peace and standing for love and dedicating their lives and their voice, sometimes at the expense of, you know, peace and well-being and maybe, you know, other things. But that there were people that were absolutely committed to walking a path of compassion and love and honoring humanity and also honoring the divine feminine as she showed up. So I just, you know, grew tremendously in this process with you all, but also just having that experience at the Parliament. I had heard of it. I didn't think that I never would have thought that I would be participating, not as a spectator, but as a facilitator in some respects. So it was truly an honor. So I'm complete.
I feel like I'm getting a little weepy over here. I don't know. I just love you all so much. I'm so glad that I've been able to be part of this experience with you all. I was thinking about, well, because I had my notes so I could go back to see what did I want to say? And I think when we were at the Parliament this summer, I was really present to my land. I have been a little less present because it's cold here in Virginia and it's taken a lot for me to get outside. I'm doing it, but it's cold. But I was thinking about intersectionality in terms of permaculture, terms of edges and boundary, and I am no permaculture expert, but I found that useful because we were talking about from earth-based spirituality, you know, like using that lens. And then what really kind of looking into what those what those meant to me, and the difference between the two things. And in permaculture, I don't know that boundaries are so much part of permaculture, but I know that edges are. And that is an area with the greatest biodiversity. So there's a lot happening right at those edges. And then if we think about that in terms of humans and meeting up with each other in those spaces, it seems like there's such huge opportunity for beauty, right? If you think about places of that intersection in nature, I don't know, they might look kind of wild. They might look, you know, there's a whole lot going on there. And so if we think about that in terms of ourselves, what does that mean? And I kind of imagined, you know, me walking from my yard out into the woods beyond my fence and what happens when I do that. And in the summer, there are grasses that come all the way up mid thigh. There might be snakes out there. There's definitely ticks. There's a whole lot of stuff going on out there. And so I have to walk really carefully. I have to be slow. I have to be really intentional. I make it a practice not to try and destroy the habitat or the life of anything, whether that's a tick or a spider or anything. So I'm trying to walk really gently. I'm saying my prayers to the mama tick. Please don't attach to me. Please go your way. And so if I apply that back to spiritual community, what does that look like? I think there's lessons. There's lessons for me, especially as a white woman. And I feel like maybe if I were a white woman, if I hadn't been kind of indoctrinated in this culture, this would be more obvious. But I do think for a lot of us is something we have to practice, which is moving slowly and with great care and great intention and making sure that we don't make any assumptions that our steps and our thoughts are the most important ones. And then there's also, there's care, right? There's repair. If we step on something that we didn't mean to, if we create harm, what are we going to do to clean that up? So these are all things that when I think about that concept of edges, like that's what comes up for me. And then in comparison, boundaries feel more like hard and fast. Like that's the gate, you know, I've created this big 10-foot fence around my yard to keep the bears out, which by the way, they found the weak point. So, you know, this is sort of a good point with any boundary that humans make, but boundaries are, they're like checkpoints, right? Of where we want to check in, like where do we want to maybe stop for a moment and say, do I want to let this in? Do I want to keep this out? Do I feel like my nervous system has the capacity to hold what you're bringing forward here? Am I ready in this moment? I think sometimes our belief systems can become our boundaries if we're not careful. Mm-hmm. And then that can really shut out things that can be beneficial to us. Yeah. And I think one other thing, as I was thinking about this, and this still feels really relevant to me today, is that, again, and I think this is informed by my own experience as a white woman, I don't think culturally white people are encouraged to get uncomfortable very often. Like, right. Like if we were, then our history of racism would be in all of our school books, like, and it's not. So I think sometimes we can make the mistake of thinking, oh, this makes me uncomfortable. This is dysregulating to my nervous system. I need to keep it out, when in fact it's a growth opportunity. And so there's a real nuance there of understanding, do I need to create a boundary here? Or is this just, you know, an opportunity for me to get uncomfortable? How do I come back and regulate myself? I don't ask anybody else to do that. But how can I stay in this moment? How can I breathe? How can I accept where I've perhaps stepped on someone else, where I've not been conscious of other things? Take the time that I need to reset and then come back. Yeah. And I guess one other thing I wanted to say, specifically around the intersectionality, Gina, you sparked this in me when you were talking, is the idea of time, you know, and just multiple of you have mentioned that we worked together for a year to put this presentation together. And that feels really relevant to me in terms of intersectionality too. I think we live in a culture that wants to see everything super fast and like, you know, we're just going to clean it all up. Everything's going to be fine. Or we're all going to be instantly in alignment. And I think when we're holding all these differences and all of these different histories too, it takes time, you know, it takes time to create trust and support. So that, I don't know, that feels like an important piece in terms of thinking about intersectionality for me right now as well.
I think the one exemplary moment for me was even before we began our presentation, and you all remember, but our listeners should see that we were placed in a very long, narrow room, which had seating for perhaps 80 to 100 people. And we were cautiously hoping we might get 10 or 15. So we pulled chairs down, way down in the front of the room into a circle. And I was standing in the back by the door because there were so many other things scheduled at the same time and people were getting lost because the McCormick Center was designed by crazy people on crack. And so everybody was getting lost. And so I was standing there saying, is this what you want to do? If so, please come in. If it's not what you want to do, I think they're down the hall. And a middle-aged white man came to the door and I said, are you here for intersectionality? And he said, yeah, I don't know what it is, but I want to hear it. And I went, great. So go on down front. You can take a chair in the circle. And he really froze in his body and got even paler than he was to begin with. And he said, oh, no, I'm a back pew Presbyterian. And I said, well, aren't we all here to move a little outside our comfort zone? And I said it in my most sweet Hoosier Midwestern voice with a nice smile. But actually, I was poking him in his ego. And he said, okay. I said, look, there's a chair right behind the circle. You can sit there. And if you decide you want to stay, you can move in or stay there, or you can bail. He came, he sat, he listened to our entire presentation through the whole thing, and then came up to one of us, I think maybe it was Karen afterwards, and said that
it was Letty and I, we were together. Right? Yeah.
And he said he would have some of the things that he heard from our presentation in his sermon, as he is a pastor of a very large Presbyterian church. So much for back pewism, but still, to me, it represented exactly what we were trying to do, which is what Liz is talking about, was saying, okay, you think this is a boundary, but can you move into that place of slight discomfort? Can you sit there and listen and be made aware of our interconnections in a way that you can not make automatic judgments, but take time? Sit there for the presentation, listen to it, let it percolate through, and then talk to your own congregations or peoples about it. So to me, he was our poster child for what intersectionality can represent. And we also had the young woman there who mentioned that she had been sort of half asleep in the pagan room, because for those of you who haven't been to the parliament, each faith tradition has a room set aside where they can go and sit and talk with each other. And she was resting there with her eyes closed, and she overheard a conversation where people said, yeah, pagans are great, except for those heathens. And she identifies as heathen. And I thought, yeah, that's exactly why we need this conversation, because those broad brush assumptions about anybody, about any single person or group of people, are almost always about 75% wrong. The broad brush just misses so much of the unique individuation and the preciousness of a human experience. And so she was my other poster child for our presentations.
I love those stories. I want to jump in after Gina. Thank you so much. And I just want to add that something I really, really liked about our workshop, and that I do this in so many different avenues of my life now, is every time we had a meeting, that we started with an intention, that we started by centering ourselves and breathing and really asking, you know, let us come together, let us listen to each other, let us be guided to where we need to go and what we need to do. That Letty brought some incredibly beautiful altar items, that it was one of the most gorgeous altars that I've seen. And then I know that we all added small things to that as well. So we brought in beauty, we brought in inspiration, we brought in breathing. And the other thing that I really liked that we did a lot of talking about is being very, very present in our nervous system and what our nervous system system can handle, because I think that has so much, again, to do with where we're at in our story and healing. And that's really one of the things that needs to be healed, and that defines those boundaries and edges for us. Because just as Liz said, you know, your body tells you, well, I don't know if I can handle this, you know, but just learning to recognize those different bodily sensations and accept them, and then breathe through them, and then walk against those boundaries or edges. Beautiful, beautiful things that I think we highlighted.
Yeah. I finally got a ping of what I was presenting in the circle, and it was about that concept from my grandmother's hands about clean pain and dirty pain. And so what do you do when your nervous system starts to send you signals that it doesn't feel safe, that you're not comfortable, that fight, flight, or flee, or even annihilate response is happening in your body? And depending on whether or not you're being chased by a bear, or you're just in an uncomfortable conversation, you know, you want to, you know, because of course, if you're being chased by a bear, you want to listen to your nervous system and get out of there. But if you're having a difficult conversation and you're getting the heart racing and this thing is happening to you, you know, what are the ways that you settle yourself, right? To breathe, right? To soothe your body, to rock your body. There are things that I observed as a child in the Pentecostal church, where the elders would come and they would be singing and rocking and humming and doing these things that were soothing to the nervous system and allowing them to regulate, right? But when we're in an intersectional place with other individuals and we're feeling the discomfort, maybe you're being confronted about something that you said that had an adverse impact on someone and they wanted to talk to you about that. The pain, the sensations that you feel when that confrontation is occurring, you've got two choices. The first choice is the clean pain, which is to take it in and just feel all the discomfort, feel all the feelings. But the other response, and unfortunately it's kind of the well-worn path, is to shut it down, to ignore it, to do a bypass. And what that bypassing does is it creates the dynamic of pain that just festers and builds up. And what it looks like interpersonally is that person may not speak to you again. They may not ever want to be in the space with you. They may never tell you that what you said impacted them negatively. And that festering is what creates the separation and the duality. Even with people with the best of intentions, when there are these blind spots to how someone who sits at an intersection of oppression that is widely accepted in society, you know, people of different sexual orientations or different abilities in their bodies and things like that, that there's been such a deep acceptance of carelessness when it comes to one another and people that are different. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, leaning into that clean pain is like pouring peroxide or alcohol or some kind of solution on a wound. It's going to sting, it's going to burn, but it's going to lead to a healing, versus, you know, just letting it fester, pretending that it didn't happen until it either explodes or gets so dire that it's, you know, not fixable. So it is a way that, you know, we encourage you to lean in when there's something uncomfortable versus leaning away and bypassing.
Mm-hmm. So. Wow. Oof. Speak, girl, speak. I'm sitting here and thinking, so I have a doctorate. Yes, Dr. Nazan. in social work. So I have one of the highest degrees of the land, and it has put me in spaces at times where I'm the only person of color in the room. And sometimes only Black woman woman in the room because of some of the things that I do in my professional career. And that's also been the case in spiritual communities where I've been the only Black woman in the space. And sometimes I think about that. It's like, well, what's bringing me here? And what has brought me into those spaces when I've been the only one was my connection to the divine feminine, which has no color, which really has no gender. And so sometimes when I look around the room and say, oh, I'm the only one, but what keeps me connected is the divine feminine, right? And I've been in spaces where I've been the only one and brought in the conversation of African spirituality. And that has been the purpose of my presence in that space, bringing in that intersectionality of race, gender, culture, and really showing and demonstrating that, you know what, sisters? We're sisters and we're one. At the very foundation, we're one. And especially being a Black witch and working in academia has been interesting, to say the least. And I made a decision some years ago to bring all of me in my workplace. And so there was a photo essay of myself and my daughter in a book called Witch that look at the spectrum of who are the witches. And there are indeed Black witches like Letty and I. And it was highlighted in the New Yorker, prestigious magazine of all places. And my colleagues reached out to say, hey, I saw you. And I was like, oh my God, I'm out. And you know what? I was okay. I had to be okay with it. So bringing my education, who I am, into my spirituality, into the space, supports me to serve the goddess in educating. In educating whoever comes to my space, especially one of my purposes in this life, born in Haiti, where Haitian voodoo is our tradition and is very much vilified in this country and others, is to say, hey, this is not a backyard, only people in the villages and the countryside practice. I have a doctorate. I am well traveled. I am author. I'm this, I'm that, and other. And I practice Haitian voodoo. And I am a Black witch. And I practice other African spirituality. And so I think for all of us, our purpose is to really share in our community who we are. And like you said, Letty, it's a courageous conversation. It can be goddamn uncomfortable. But yet we are doing the service to the divine feminine, the goddess, who is here already. She ain't coming, she here. And so it's really, so our presentation at Parliament was really showing who we are and all our intersectionality and all our beauty and all the phases that the goddess comes in. I'm complete.
I feel like you just kind of put a little cherry on top of this conversation. So well done. Mic drop, right? Oh my gosh. Oh, this went really fast. I want to keep talking to you all, also selfishly, because I want to keep talking to you. But I think we need to wrap up. Gina, I'm going to put you on the spot. So one thing, and you are free to say no, but one thing that we did that we closed the Parliament with is Gina led everybody in our circle in song. And it was really cool because there were definitely some people there that I think were like, what is happening? I don't know what's going on. And yet they did it. They were game. And it was so beautiful. And so Gina, I don't know how you feel about that. If you would be willing to sing us out of this episode. Okay. That would be beautiful. And before you do that, I think we'll just wrap there. We'll let you sing. We'll wrap there. I just wanted to say thank you to each of you beautiful women for being here with me. I am so glad we were able to pull this off. I love you. I'm so grateful. So grateful to all of you for listening. I'm just full of love right now. So Gina, yeah, let's ride that.
Deep down inside of me, I got a fire going on. Deep down inside of me, I got a fire going on. Part of me wants to sing about the light. Part of me wants to cry, cry, cry. Deep down inside of, deep down inside of, I got a fire going, I got a fire going. Deep down inside of me, I got a fire going on. Part of me wants to sing about the light. Part of me wants to cry, 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 cry.
Home to Her is hosted by me, Liz Kelly. You can visit me online at hometoher.com, where you can find show notes and other episodes. You can read articles about the sacred feminine, and you'll also find a link to join the Home to Her Facebook group for lots more discussion and exploration of her. You can also follow me on Instagram at Home to Her to keep up to date with the latest episodes. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here soon.